Okay, the first question, it's my question. My question is, are you a worship leader who is a musician? Let me put it this way. Are you is a worship leader a pastor who is a musician, or are you a musician who is a pastor? So what are you? Who are you? Who are you people? Who are you people? What are you? Are you a pastor? Are you a musician? Are you a musician who's a pastor? Are you a pastor who's a musician? I mean, I'm trying to figure this out. Well, Tom, I've had a few of Tom you before. I've had a few answer. Of you on staff before. I'm trying to figure you guys out. So what is this?
Tom had a great answer to this.
Okay. I did. Yeah. Yes, I did. You know what? I mean, we're a servant first. Right?
Go.
I think we're a servant first, and wherever God's calling us at that season in our time and our fellowship is a time that we jump in, as I have done. And it's like, so I'm a servant. I'm a shepherd. And I can shepherd the folks in our church from the place of worship as a worship leader, but also from being in the pulpit as their pastor. That's how I kind of see it.
You're just a servant.
That's how I look at it, yes.
Got it. Mm-hmm. That's good. What about you, Jason?
That's how I started as well. I was serving before I even knew how to play music. And then I learned to play music, and I was able to lead worship in children's and then youth. But when I was ordained, a part of what I guess the need that I met was worship. And so there's a part of leading worship and serving in that capacity that comes along with, I was ordained for that need. So it's a little hard for me to define. I feel, in my spirit more of a wanting to shepherd before actually playing music, but then it's always been a part.
When people come up to you and say, hey, Jason.
Yeah.
Who are you? What do you do? Do you say, I'm a pastor, or do you say, I'm a worship leader? Or do you say, I'm a musician?
For me, it kind of depends on who asks me and what they're asking on. If it has to do with the music, then I usually tell them that I'm the pastor that oversees the worship team.
Oh, okay.
But if it's something at the church, I might tell them I'm the executive pastor. If they don't care about any of that, I'm here to help you.
Okay,
so,
good. All right, Matt.
I started as a musician, and that's all I ever wanted to be. And then God just worked in my heart, and he changed my life, and I became a pastor. And so now I would say I'm a pastor who uses my music skills for whatever God wants me to do.
That's a good answer. Tim, yeah?
Yeah, so I feel like I'm more of a pastor than a worship leader. I started out leading worship, but always just as a function. There is a pastoral role in it, but I definitely... My calling is really to instruct and equip the saints for the work of ministry. So, but yeah, I mean, I love doing worship. I love being part of it, but I really feel called more to the pastoral side of it.
Great, great. Well, all right, let's just get right into these questions here. What policies do you have regarding worship leaders and alcohol? And I mean, is it like three or four beers before, no more than three or four beers before you come up and lead worship, or what is it? What are the rules?
I think Jason and I have the same answer. It's like, no, it's just not.
No.
Not even a consideration.
Yeah. Right.
Not an option.
So obviously you don't want somebody drinking before they come up and lead worship, but I mean, is this a prohibition? I mean, do all your worship leaders, are they required to be teetotalers?
Yes.
Okay. For you?
Same. Guys? Yeah, it's the same.
Okay. What do we require?
If you're on staff, we don't drink. And even if I weren't on staff, that would be a personal choice I would make as well. I've seen what alcohol can do in someone's life. At the same time, we're called to, as leaders in the church, to help people. I was watching a show just a few weeks ago, NCIS, And I'm saying it for the premise, because they were at a bar drinking, and then they get this call and they have to pull their weapons, and they're going and you know, trying to get the bad guy. And I thought, how can they be doing this? How are they supposed to be doing their job while they just had, you know, alcohol and stuff? And I thought, that's the same thing for me, you know, if even if I weren't on staff. But I don't want to get a call at 10 o'clock at night after I've been drinking, and then I'm supposed to use my judgment, and we're to be filled with the Holy Spirit, as you were mentioning earlier, and I'm supposed to minister to somebody under the influence, you know?
Okay, does that hold true for, like, drummers?
Sometimes they play better. They need a little help. No.
I could tell you for the philosophy for our church is whoever's on the stage is going to be an example before the people. And, you know, for some people, they might think that's too serious. But God has brought us the people that we need for the band. And so it is for drummers and bass players and vocalists and guitar players. And it's also something that we clearly walk through and talk through when we bring somebody on in a volunteer position. And that's what works for us. And I like that it's that way. It's mm-hmm. cleaner.
It's kind of like, you know, this is what the church looks for. This is what the church is interested in a person that, like Chris had said it, and Jason, you'd said it in your last session that, you know, like it or not, when someone is brought up here, there's a weird expectation that folks have towards that individual now that is like, oh my goodness, they're up there, and so they must be doing something right. They are in a prominent role being up on the stage. And so with that said, there's a certain expectation that kind of goes along with that. And so I know we as a church, that's my heart as a senior pastor to do that and to explain it to them, how we roll.
What about you, Tim?
Yeah, well, we don't necessarily have a specific policy on that. We don't say you can or you can't. I mean, we try and pick particularly leadership people, you know, based on their character. And we know them, we spend time with them and things like that. But in terms of like across the board on our worship team, we don't have a policy like that. You know, I would address that if that was an issue. Like you said, I mean, we don't want to cause people to stumble or anything like that, but you know, it's not been a problem. And if it ever is a problem, that's where you can either deal with it up front or you can deal with it on an individual basis. And that's kind of more how I prefer to deal with it is, I'm a rebel, man. I just, rules bother me. So I do my best to put the least amount of rules in place as possible. But I understand the purpose behind that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think for us, certainly, look, I don't drink. It's a liberty, a freedom that I have laid aside for a greater good. You know, because I am an example to others in the body, and so I don't drink. But the Bible doesn't require total abstinence. I mean, the Bible gives us the freedom, gives people the freedom to drink in moderation, as long as they don't cause someone to stumble, and as long as they don't get drunk. And so I don't want to lay a burden on any of the worship team that God doesn't lay on them. And so we certainly wouldn't want someone to be on the worship team who had a drinking problem or who didn't drink in a responsible manner. But if there's someone on our team who's not a pastor and just wanting to serve, use their gift and serve in a special way, and their life is in order and their life is together, then we're not going to make a big deal about that. Agree, Matt?
I agree.
Yeah, good. Okay, some other things. How about some functional things here? Does your team use a click track?
Someone also asked after your thing, what is a click track?
A metronome. A timekeeper.
And what app is best for that?
Ask the drummer. We've changed three or four times in the last 6 months, and I, for the life of me, I can't remember the. I'll have to text him and get the one in case someone needs to know the one we're using. But we use a click track, a metronome, probably no less than 3/4 of the songs. I have a couple different drummers. One in particular, I give him the freedom to. I always want to start with the click track so we start at the right tempo, but then to shut it off if need be, if we're going into a spontaneous moment or something like that, or we're just really off for whatever reason. Sometimes you don't realize it, but the song you just did was slower, the next one was faster, and it just feels like a really bad collision. And so he has a lot of wisdom on whether to shut it off or not, but we do use it quite a bit. I've also played with teams that don't use a metronome well, and I would just say if you're not using it well, don't use it. It can create more problems than help, but it, for me and for our current team, it helps quite a bit. So,
great.
We use a click track, and it's for the sole purpose, and I tell our guys this all the time, for the sole purpose of starting a song in the right tempo. You end a fast song, and then you go into a slow song, and you're still in upbeat mode, or vice versa. You're ending a slow song, and you're trying to get upbeat, and it just won't work. And so we always start together. It helps with transitions. When you got the little person in your ear saying, intro, 2, 3, 4, and then everybody comes in, you know. But hey, the moment we get off, I kill it. Sometimes my drummer says, why'd you kill it? I wanted to get us back on. And so sometimes it becomes a game, depending on who's playing, of can we get back on track? But it helps you stay together. But is it the way that everybody needs to do? No. I mean, if you're by yourself, you know, it might be working for you not to use it.
Okay, what multi-track tools should I use to learn and practice songs? Are there any tools?
We use multitracks.com, and it has an integration and planning center, and so they can our band can go to planning center and see all the songs we're doing, the keys they're doing them in, and then they can just click on acoustic guitar, and it will play the song, and the acoustic guitar will be elevated in volume. They can learn the parts. Same with drums, same with bass. And so it's a very nice integration that we
use. You let him pay for all that stuff? You let him use that stuff?
Vernon. He may not know about it.
Vernon.
I charge it
just
to sound
in, goes into Vernon Vortex.
Can I get your guys' passcode to the...
It's actually your passcode.
It's mine?
Wow. Pastor Chris pays for it.
You'd never believe the amount of money that just disappears. Just gets, where'd it go? Vernon Vortex. Every conversation I have with that man, Pastor Sandy, we need another piece of, no, we don't, Vernon. No, a piece of equipment. Okay, how much and how often do you practice? We've been talking about practice, but how much do you practice? I mean, it's just practice, man. It's just practice.
We don't call it practice. We call it rehearsal, but yeah. But I don't lead anymore. But you know, our worship team meets. We have a Saturday night, and they meet before Saturday night. Of course, they have the songs well before on Planning Center, and they know what they're doing. And they should be when they show up, they should be ready.
They should be
pretty
ready
much
to
ready to go.
Yeah. Do they run through the songs? How much you practice?
Yeah, I mean they run through the songs probably an hour and a half or so before you know, like the trial run on Saturday nights, and then shore it up early Sunday morning to do the same thing, run through the set again.
You feel like that's enough practice?
It depends on you know, who's on the team on that week. No, I'm just kidding. But I mean, yeah, I mean I think our people are, we're not expecting perfection either, so. You know, there are mistakes made, but...
He has all the Nashville musicians coming to his church.
I was going
to
say. Yeah. So, Matt, how much do we practice?
So we rehearse on Sunday mornings, and what I mean by that is we're pulling it all together Sunday mornings. So I send the songs out throughout the week. It's usually a song pool that we've been working with. The expectation is that they practice at home, they know their parts, they show up on Sunday morning, we put it all together before our two services, because our week is really busy. We have something here at the church just about every night of the week, and which is one of the reasons we use multitracks.com, because it helps. It's, that kind of acts as our software for rehearsal at home, and then we put it together on a Sunday morning. We'll have some extra practices at Easter and Christmas and, you know, for newer songs and just making sure that things are even tighter, but...
Tom,
Yeah, what we do is we practice on Tuesday evenings.
Oh, you do?
Tuesday evenings, which is good. We tried Monday. That was not a good fit for our church and the folks. So Tuesday evenings, and again, we send the songs out to the team a couple months ahead of time. And our hope is that they are also they're also with YouTube links, so they can actually see how the original artist performs them, or a YouTube link that how we would normally do it. You know, maybe it's more low key, or because with a church with we have five members, and so with that said, to watch a worship video by, you know, 15 people on stage, it just doesn't mix well with us. So we look for that. And then, again, our hope is that when we get together, that like a baseball team, you know, you each know your position and you come in ready to kind of play the game. And so that's how we work it.
The person who had that question about practice, let me just say this. Tom's team might be better than Jason's team. Jason's team might be better than Matt's team, etc. But you want your team to be the very best that it can be. Because when we bring our worship to Jesus, we're bringing him our sacrifice. And we don't want to bring him a blemished sacrifice, a tainted sacrifice. We want to bring him the best of our litter, best of our flock. And so we want to make sure that we practice. Well, how much do you practice? Well, how much time do you have to practice? What does your best effort look like? And that's what you want to work for. You want to work for your best effort. That you can give that sacrifice to Jesus and be happy about it. Right?
And that's really an individual thing, you know,
sure
within
it
the
is.
Team members, because
sure
when they give their best and we send the songs out so early that they're able to actually listen to them, go over them, hear their parts. So when they do show up and we have that Tuesday night, man, they have ingrained it in their heart, prayerfully, and then we're able just to roll.
That's right.
So, yeah.
Okay, how can you encourage a teammate to improve his skill without letting them know that they just aren't hitting the right notes? Whose question? No, don't raise your hand. What's a tactful way to do that, Matt?
I think you need to let them know. Yeah, I mean, you don't want to lie to them, and you don't want to, you know, create some scenario around it, but there's a way to let them know very tactfully, and Jason's going to tell you how.
First thing you want to do is smile. True story, my dad actually told me you could say anything you wanted to anybody as long as you had a smile on your face. It's partially true, but Amanda in her workshop today was giving some good advice on this. She was talking about how you want to give some encouragement along with sharing something difficult with somebody. And I found myself with some of those that are having difficulty playing the right notes, doing that, sharing with them. This is going well, but this whole section right here, I think you have the wrong notes. And so let's see if you can stick to these notes. And just walk it through them and see if they can do it. If they can't stick to the notes, then the main stage may not be for them in that season, but there might be another spot where they're able to plug in, or even just plug into practice. Practice at home, come in and practice with the team. Each team's unique, but I know for me personally, if I'm messing up, I want to know. I want to know how to get better, so I think it's good to be kind and smile, but to give them some good advice on how to get better.
It's good.
I'd be careful, too, not to do it in front of the whole band. A lot of times I just try to walk over next to somebody, and I'll just kind of say, hey, do you see these chords right here? You know, why don't you try this? Or, you know, or hey, can we simplify this? You know, you want to be careful not to beat them up before service right in front of everybody and make them feel bad about what they're doing before they even do it, you know?
Great. Okay, I had one. How do you keep the team motivated and willing to take time and learn the music at home and not at rehearsal? I mean, how do you keep people doing that? I guess we've talked about that a little bit, but you know, people start taking things for granted. You know, how do you keep people motivated?
Yeah.
Matt, what were you saying earlier about that?
This whole team.
He had a good point earlier.
Oh, I did. You know, years ago, I've been leading worship here for 12 plus years. And so when I first came, everybody just kind of showed up and played whatever they wanted to. You know, at the key, the songs in D, we just play. And over time, we had some meetings, and you know, I was casting a vision of, hey, we want to learn these songs kind of how they're played. We're not trying to mimic, and we're not trying to be like that artist, but at least it cleans it up so much. If everybody just comes and just strums nonstop and it's just full on from start to finish, it just doesn't sound that great. And so we've tried to work hard at building dynamics and, you know, starting slow or starting soft and then going high and, you know, and learning parts. And so I would just have meetings from time to time, and this is what we're trying to do. This is what we're trying to achieve. Can you guys help me out with this? It'll make us sound better. We introduced a click track. We've introduced some things like that. And maybe there's some reluctancy at first, but over time they see the benefit of it. And it just really starts building this cohesive team.
I'd say tell them to listen to the live stream. That'll help big time, big time. Hey, listen, I've listened to some live streams I've sang on, and no wonder I'm not leading worship anymore.
I think encouragement goes a long way as well. I was just thinking of our team. Not that we want to use flattery, but at the same time, when we're in rehearsal and everything's just clicking together so well, it's a great opportunity for a leader to speak up, and that sounds incredible. I'm thinking of one of our bass players. We were playing that song Holy Forever, and he picked up on a bass part from one of the recordings, and I could hear it. And so after the rehearsal, I was like, Dylan, that was incredible, dude. Like, that sounded so good, and it brings so much to the song. And he's just like beaming. And I think that goes a long way with people. Even when they see that, it's like, oh yeah, like, we're doing this for the Lord. Let's do the best we can, and let's put in some practice.
Yeah, and Sandy, I was just going to add to that. It's the same kind of thing I'm thinking is, like, as a pastor knows his flock, I think the worship pastor or the overseer, that worship leader, should also know the condition of their flock. And when I share with our team leaders at church, you know, they are an extension of the greater vision of our church and my heart. And so what I try to instill in them is, you guys also have your own flocks, right? And you know the condition of their hearts as well. And by that, like, when I'm trying to encourage, it's funny, I can't encourage the entire team at, there's five of us, right? I can't encourage all of them at the same time in the same way. But if I can pinpoint individually, you know, if I know that one of the young ladies on our team has feels a little bit insecure about a certain song or a certain place that she's backing up, and she nails it, I mean, I'm going to say, wow, that was amazing. That was awesome. You did it, you know? Just individually helping them be motivated, you could say, but really exhorted in the things of God, you know? And if we're walking in the Spirit as either a worship leader, pastor, worship pastor, I think being like in the Spirit, Galatians 5, just in the Spirit, in tune with them individually.
That's good. Okay, how often do you introduce new songs to the congregation?
We don't have a set frequency. I think some seasons are busier than others in terms of trying to have the time to put together new songs, but I would just say we don't go a long time. So I think on average throughout the year, we probably have at least one per month, but it might be a couple. And then there's seasons like during the...
You only have like one new song a month? Is that all?
Maybe two, maybe three, but at least one.
Okay.
Yeah, somewhere right in there.
Okay.
And then I'm thinking of like right before Easter, there's usually like 6 to 8 new ones that come every year. It's just a cycle that we're in. And we may not play them all at the same time because we want people to know what we're playing, but we seem to have a lot more in the spring into the summer. And then it happens again in the fall. There's a little more time in our schedule where there's more songs that come through. So.
Okay.
We add new songs all the time, like pretty frequently.
What's that mean, every week?
Probably one a week. We try to, like, our set is usually four songs, and we'd say, hey, keep like three really well-known songs that people know and add one. If one, we have three different worship leaders, so they, you know, they have the freedom to pick or a newer song they want to bring in. But man, there's so many great songs out there, you know, it's, and you want to keep fairly current. I think it's important to do that.
Okay, why is it important?
I just think that people, I think Chris said it earlier, people listen to the radio and there's songs that they really are clicking with and God has ministered into them, and bringing those songs in can really help, I think.
Right. Okay. Matt?
We probably introduce songs maybe once a month, 4 to 6 weeks, somewhere around that range. You know, the Bible says sing a new song.
A new song?
More
we
than
do
that?
It more often than that.
Once a month?
Oh, my.
I do it as often as
he
tells
asleep.
Me to.
He's asleep.
Every time he texts me a song, that's when we do it. So.
Which goes to the next question here. What are your favorite sources for discovering new music? The senior pastor.
You know, that's not really far off.
It's
because,
not far off.
You know, the senior pastor is really the worship leader for the church. We've heard that many, many times, and I think it's really true, as the senior pastor has the vision and the heart for the church and knowing the flock. I think as I, in a sense, lead the worship team, but I rely on another individual to really know my heart, so that when he chooses the songs or we talk about things, it's like, wow, you know what? You knew my heart. You know what the flock is needed. You know what the people are searching for. And you know what? That's a great, great selection, you know, kind of thing. So, I mean, we like doing sometimes some of the old Maranatha stuff, you know? I mean, it's funny. We're kind of in that time period in our church to where the simple, and maybe it's because we're only like five people, right? But it's like the simplicity of some of that worship from that time is just so simple, and the people seem to just love it because they know it. Mm-hmm. And it's just really a blessing.
Right. I think one of the most important things that the senior pastor can do is to continue to encourage the worship team to get better at what they're doing and to continue to raise the bar, continue to raise the standard. And I know Matt gets tired of it, but I'm always sort of nudging him to the next step. What else can we do? What else can happen here? What new combinations would you like to, can we do, and so forth. And one of the things I'm excited about this coming year, I realize that Matt's got small kids at home. He works all day, every day of the week. I've given him the opportunity this next year to just take an afternoon off each week and just go up to our cabin up here and just spend some time with the Lord and write some songs. Write some songs, come up with some new songs, put some creative energies into his worship leading. So many times we become creatures of habit, where it's just the same old. We get into that rhythm every week, and it's the same old. And I think we just lull our people to sleep. And I think being interjecting something new, something creative, something exciting, these are all ways that we worship God. This is the Creator. We worship somebody called the Creator, and we're not very creative. That doesn't make a lot of sense. We need to be creative. We need to push ourselves in terms of getting better and trying new things and new arrangements and that kind of thing. So, do you agree?
When you send him up there, do you tell him, hey, make it peppy?
I do. He knows that's the standard. That is the standard thing here, and it's got to be peppy.
I always quote you. I say, hey, Pastor Sandy said make it peppy, guys, so let's make it peppy.
Make it peppy. Absolutely.
But you do when you
we do make
walk
it
off
peppy.
The stage, yeah, and go, man, you're going to close us with something peppy?
It's hard to find peppy songs, too.
That's why you got to write them.
Yeah.
But I do think we need to continue to raise the bar for ourselves.
Yeah.
I do that for my own teaching. I don't do anything. It's not anything I'm pushing on him. I'm not doing for me. I want to get better at what I'm doing. You know, Paul wrote to Timothy and he said, "Let your progress be made known to all men." In other words, let others know that you're working on your craft, your ministry here, and you're getting better at it. You're progressing in it. I think that's my job as a Bible teacher. If I'm not a better Bible teacher this year than I was last year, something's wrong. I need to be raising the bar for me, pushing me. Same way with Matt. Same way with our other worship team. We did some really creative things this past year at Christmas time, and I was very, very happy with that. And I think our people were ministered to in a different way. I thought it was wonderful. And so I look forward to the Lord stretching us and continuing to help us go in new directions. You know, the Lord loves a new song. You know what the scripture says? A new song. He talks about that one day he's going to make all things new. One day we have a new heaven and a new earth. God's always into doing new things. And we just shouldn't, we should fight hard from getting stale and getting rote and stuck in the mud.
And when we stumble on the new things, his mercies are new.
Absolutely. Right? His mercies are new.
The next day.
That's right.
I think that has to be modeled, like you said. I mean, I think that's my same attitude is I want to grow, you know, as a better communicator, a pastor, Bible teacher, and I expect that for our worship team as well. Like, they need to continue to grow. I mean, and people are in different places. Some people are, you know, they're just volunteers, so, you know, they don't have as much time, but I think that should be the attitude because it's ultimately for God. I mean,
absolutely. And see, here's the caveat. You don't do this because if you become a better teacher, more people are going to come to your church. That may or may not be the case. I mean, I've heard Bible teachers that I wouldn't walk across the street to hear them teach, but their church is packed every Sunday morning. I mean, to me, it's no rhyme or reason. I mean, no, I'm serious. I mean, just because you can become a better Bible teacher, it doesn't necessarily mean there's going to be more people in the church. So that's not the point. The point, though, is that God deserves your very best. That's the point. And when we come with our worship, when I come with my sermon, I'm bringing my sacrifice to the altar. And I want that sacrifice to be represent my best effort. It may not always be, but it may not always be my best. I mean, some are better than others. Ask my wife. But I want it to be my best effort. I want to have put all that I had into it. And so.
Pastor Chuck encouraged us with that, didn't he say?
Oh, sure.
He said, do your best and commit
the rest. Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely. That's not a good one. Over the course of a year, which is better, 300 songs or 30 songs? That's a good question. Over the course of a year, which would be better, 300 songs or 30 songs? I mean, would you rather do new songs every week, or would you rather drill down on certain songs? How do you feel about it? It's probably the balance is it's not either or. Fill me out here. I'm hanging.
Yeah, for us, I know. For Pastor Chris, for our staff, if we had to choose, it would be 30, although it's more than 30. But we want to sing songs that people know. We want people to engage in worship with God and sing praises to him and have that time with him. And if we're doing 300 songs, they're never getting a chance to know those songs. So even though there may be a level of contemplation on a song that we sing one time that could be good. At the same time, there's not an engagement in the same way. So, but probably more like 50 or 60 or 70, maybe. I don't know. What do you think?
Probably depends on your congregation, I think. If I'm not going to say that because that would not go well. But if your congregation is full of younger people and they're constantly listening to music and they're, you know, they know this stuff, then you probably would want to bring in more new things. If It depends on your people and where they're at. And I think that's ultimately how you decide how much you bring in and not. And you definitely know you're bringing too many new songs, and when you look out and nobody's singing, then you obviously have missed the point, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
True story. When I came back into worship, leading the team last year, I called Matt up. I said, bro, I said, I find myself in this role right now. What would you recommend? Because to get me back on track and the new team on track. And he said, come up with about 15 songs, I think you said. And just start with those. Just start with 15 songs. And it was for a period of time to where the congregation got, understood us, where we were, what we were singing. And then it worked out great. It worked out great. So
it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Glad to hear that.
Yeah, it did. I never told you. It did work out.
We got a couple of questions here about how to build unity within the group. And I want to direct this to Matt, because we've had lots of worship leaders over the years, but we have never had a worship leader who was able to build as tight and as cohesive a worship team as Matt has done over his last 12 years with us. And I think that's one of your great gifts and contributions, Matt. What do you do? How are you doing this, man? What are you doing?
Well, thank you. It's the Lord. But, time's up. When we recruit new members, I lay out some standards for the worship team, and do you have a heart for God? I mean, we're looking for hearts for God who want to serve Him and please Him and not get up here and do their own thing. And so I think it starts with bringing them on, with the right mindset, the right heart. But then, there was a season in 2019 where once a month we would go back to my house and we would just kind of have a worship night where it was just kind of free flowing. There was no plan, and we just kind of worshiped and spent time together. And that was once a month. That was 12 times that year. COVID hit, and we kind of broke that up. We've done it a couple times since then. But we're just in communication with each other a lot, too, and we hang out. And Allie has a group of girls that she meets with a lot, and working with the girls and the vocalists. And, we work at it, and we get to know each other, and we spend time with each other, and casting a vision. You're giving me a vision. I'm giving them a vision. And
great.
Yeah.
Good. Now we're done. We're about ready to go eat, but I've saved the most important thing for last. And so if you forget everything else that's been said today, I want you to remember this right here. There is one thing you can do. It doesn't cost any money. You don't have to gain any skill. You don't have to buy any new instruments. But there's one thing you can do that will make your worship team better this coming week. Smile. Just smile.